On the podcast today, we're going to speak about the one phrase that explains the nature of our existence, the nature of the universe's existence, and the nature of consciousness itself. And this phrase came from Shankara, the great Advaita Vedanta master. Now, this phrase is seemingly contradictory from different levels of perspective. So from a sage, they completely understand it. From a novice, it's a difficult phrase to understand. And if you only dwell in the relative world, then it's a puzzle.
It's completely illogical.
Illogical. Mm. So let's read that phrase. That phrase is, Brahman is real, the universe is unreal, and the universe is Brahman. So Brahman here is the ultimate reality of the universe, the ultimate substratum that is the nature of existence itself. It's immanent within all experience, but also transcends all of experience. It's identical with the concept of Tao in Taoism. And so we see the contradiction here where Shankara says Brahman is real and then the universe is unreal and the universe is Brahman.
Yeah. So in the second line saying the universe is unreal, then the last one is the universe is Brahman.
Yeah.
How does that make sense?
Really? Yeah. So people would probably come to this and go, is this some sort of koan or something like this?
It's
almost like a koan, isn't it?
Yes, it is actually because, again, based on logic, doesn't make any sense.
No.
But that's not what we are talking about here.
No.
Because it makes perfect sense when you were to talk about philosophically.
Yes.
So that's what's important is here.
Yeah. And this one quote gets into the depth of the differences between non-duality and duality and this contradiction between both that especially a lot of spiritual aspirants, you know, get confused about. Like this one in particular and also the free will conversation are two conversations that a lot of people get so confused about when they talk about duality, non-duality, like how can a sage dwell in the world? And, you know, so we see great masters like Nisargadatta Maharaj, who does bhajans all the time during his life, and so he has extreme devotion towards Shiva. And then we have Ramana Maharshi, who has an intense devotion towards Arunachala and Shiva, but they're both non-dual masters. They, you know, they've kind of, in some sense, transcended the world of duality, but they still have an intense love for Brahman.
Yeah, they were very devoted bhakti at the same time.
Yes.
And again, as we know, Swami Vivekananda's master, who was Ramakrishna, had a very strong devotion to this Kali, the goddess, which is very well known. And he also practiced a lot of bhajans and things like that.
Mm.
And I see that a lot of people on the spiritual path also confused by this concept of jiva.
Mm-hmm.
There is jiva, which is an individual soul, and then also there is the ultimate one reality, absolute reality, one absolute consciousness, which is Brahman at the same time. Mm. So how is it possible that the jiva is there, but then we are a part of this one absolute consciousness? So how is that possible? Is it paradoxical?
It's right? Paradoxical, yes.
So that's also a little bit connected to this the three statements.
Yes. And to kind of resolve that, like Shankara, there's a classical Sanskrit phrase in the Vivekachudamani by Shankara, and it goes, Brahma Satyam Jagat Mitya.
Mm.
Now, Brahma Satyam Jagat Mitya means Brahman alone is real, the world is an appearance, or the world is an illusion or a delusion in some sense.
Right.
So Jagat is world, Mitya means kind of appearance, and obviously Brahma Satyam is like the truth of Brahman alone, like Brahman alone exists. So that's kind of what's being said in this phrase, but Like I like the conversation in this book, Be As You Are, where the student's asking Ramana Maharshi about this quote, and he kind of explains to them that the third line explains the previous two. So the first two obviously were Brahman is real, the universe is unreal, and the universe is Brahman. So, you know, again, is it a koan? Sort of. And this is why Ramana would always say that Brahman and Maya are one, and people would get confused because Maya is the illusion of reality or the appearance.
Yes.
As we were talking about the other Shankara quote.
Yeah.
And so how is that possible? And it's resolved in that third line. Mm-hmm. It's a state of consciousness or perception,
yes,
that is out of tune with the actual reality.
Yes. Yeah, that's why all three lines are reflected on different level of perception here, I think. So first, again, is the Brahman is real. The Brahman alone is the absolute, only the truth, which is somewhat at a ultimate level of awareness and pure consciousness level. Brahman alone is real. Nothing else is real. The Brahman itself contains everything like this. Yeah, so then second line says the universe is unreal. And as you mentioned that in that quote, you said, Jagat Mitcha, is that the world is an illusion. World is unreal or Maya, you could say. And the third line is, again, the universe is Brahman. So how does that make sense? Is it possible? Yes, it is possible philosophically because, again, if an individual was to dwell in this external level of reality and consciousness, then your perception is also come from that place. Your perception is also based on external reality, right? So that from that perspective, this external reality itself is real. Right?
Yeah.
So that from that perspective, then universe is unreal, it's an illusion. And that individual's perception, not realizing that is unreal.
Yeah. So it's a real relative perspective, right? Like that unenlightened individual is dwelling in the duality of life. And it's real to them from that perspective, as what you're saying, right? Like it's not, because they don't know Brahman. They're out of accord with the nature of reality itself. So they dwell in Maya. And Maya, because of the nature of the dualistic perception, is a measurement, a constant measurement of reality, according to the jiva, as you said, the persona that we have accumulated through our life. And so we look through that lens, and we think that that appearance of the world, according to our way of measuring it, is the reality itself. But only Brahman alone exists, as Shankara said. But as you're saying, like from that perspective, it is real to the dualistic consciousness. But as we all know, like, and everyone listening and watching our podcast, is that, you know, we are here to explore some philosophy. So we're supposed to overcome that dualistic mind and actually understand the third line, right?
Yes,
that's right. So understand that it's all Brahman. Like, Maya is Brahman still. You know what I mean? Like,
yes, exactly. Yes. You know. Yeah. So again, there's a few different analogies to explain this, and the famous one is a snake in a rope.
Yes.
And one confuses rope as a snake, right? So when you come from the perception of Maya, an illusion, that rope appears to be snake. Again, it just appears to be snake. And that one thinks that's a snake. But in a perception of a Brahman, which is the truth, then the rope is a rope.
Always a rope.
Yeah, always been a rope. But an individual get invested into this external world, thinks that's snake, and believes that's snake, right? And another an analogy I really like, which is made by the Swami Swapa Priyananda, saying, like, is sky blue? Yes, it is. And at night, is sky blue? No, it isn't.
It's black. Yeah.
It's black.
Yeah.
Is sky blue when the sun setting? No, it's not. It's orangey, reddy sort of color.
Yep.
So the sky is blue in the daytime, but it isn't at night or sunset time. So appears to be blue, and it is blue during the daytime, but at night it is not.
Yes.
And okay, let's explore if sky is really blue. Is it take a rocket ship or something and go to through the space, and you know, there's people going to space, isn't there?
Yeah.
So when you go to this atmosphere, it is still blue, but there is no sky. Then. Yeah, you're already above the sky.
Yeah.
So sky can be blue, but ultimately it is not.
No.
So acknowledging the sky is blue, that is true at a one level of perspective.
Yes.
But sky is not blue at the other level of perception. But when you go even above that, is sky...
It's colorless.
Exactly.
It's colorless. It's actually, the nature of the sky is colorless.
Again, in the perspective relevant world.
Yeah. So the relevant perspective, the relative perspective is it's blue, it's like they think it's blue.
Yes.
That's the illusion. Like it appears blue, but from a non-dual perspective, the non-dual perception is it's colorless. It's always colorless. The sky is colorless.
Mm.
It's not the blue, the black, the red, the orange. These are an appearance, appearing on the field of its own colorless nature.
Yeah.
Same as like our mind, right? Like the movie that we have going in our own mind is appearing on the surface of the pure empty consciousness that we are. Yeah, but I really like those two quotes, love. Those two analogies, because if we start with the first one, if we look at the snake and the rope, which is a classic one in Vedanta, is that through Maya, right, through our incorrect way of seeing the world and our way of measuring the world, we superimpose our version of reality on the rope, on the pure nature itself, which is just rope.
Yeah.
So then we think it's a snake. And so what happens when we think it's a snake? We act accordingly. So like if it's a fearful projection, then we will act in a fearful way. It will determine our life. But, you know, a sage like Shankara, if they see it's just a rope, it doesn't affect them at all. They know it's a rope itself. So this is alluding to that the nature of the self, which is Atman, selfie with a capital S, which is the undifferentiated consciousness, which is identical with Brahman, the ultimate reality of the universe. When you see the world as Atman, there's no fear, there's nothing arises because you see everything as it is. You see the rope.
Yes.
You're not living through your superimposition of what you think the world is. Mm. And so that's very important, especially for a spiritual aspirant, because you're trying to sort of eradicate this hypnosis of the way the jiva sees the world. We're trying to understand the jiva as Shiva, right? So you're trying to get rid of all of that so you can see reality as it in its naked state, as it truly is. So you want to see people as the Atman. This is like the heightened state, right? Like people will say, why did... Nisargadatta Maharaj or Ramana Maharshi, you know, have such a love in their eyes in this sense because they saw people as the Atman. They didn't buy into the appearance of, you know, all of the crap they got going on in their life and the confusion they have and even the body itself, right? Yeah. Like it's, because as Joseph Campbell said, the body is just a vehicle for the one consciousness to express itself, basically.
Yeah.
But we get caught in the illusion, the play, the Leela, and then we think Guy Young's doing this and doing that, and oh, she's, it's like that when Alan Watts went to India and he was sitting with a guru and there was someone mad was walking down the street and he looked at Alan and said, Shiva's coming on funny today, isn't it? Alan made a whole bit about that, saying, oh, come off it, Shiva, stop pretending you're this person here.
Yeah,
exactly. You know what I mean? Like, so... But that's a good point, right? Shiva's coming on funny take. When you see it from this perspective of the self, you know, it is kind of funny, right? Like, because we could say that with anyone. Like, you know, people get so mad about things they see online, but you could probably say, well, Shiva's coming on pretty funny today, isn't it? There's a lot of variation.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Mm.
Yeah, again, like, we want to be at a level of perception to be able to see the sky is colorless.
Yes.
And that is to say that the Brahman only is the truth.
Yes. Yes.
And the universe is Brahman.
Yes.
Then, so the what the here that we need to take what we need to take a consideration is that where are we sitting?
Mm.
Where what perception are we operating from?
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
So that here is when this knowledge of self-realization or yes. self-knowledge with the capital S comes into place.
Yep.
Again, as we know, Sri Ramana Maharishi always questioned the who is speaking right now, who is seeing things where you are saying, basically. So that, again, the question of I, who is this I? So that question is exactly what we were talking about here, that what perception are you operating from?
Yes.
So then if you were to be able to answer that question, then you will be able to answer what plane of existence, what plane of reality that you abide in right now.
Yes.
Right. So yes, that the self-knowledge, again, going within, asking, keep asking the question to your own self, and yeah, self-inquiry again. That comes to solve this problem, this quiz.
Exactly. Yeah. Are you seeing reality from the relative perspective, or are you seeing Brahman itself? Like, so are you seeing the world according to Jiva, or are you seeing it from? Do you abide as Atman?
Yeah.
And you see everything as you said, that's what self-knowledge is, right? The knowledge of Brahman itself. The knowledge that your Atman is identical with Brahman. And that's not to say that you're God or anything like ridiculous like that. It means that just your undifferentiated state of consciousness would never even make that claim because it's undifferentiated.
Yeah.
Maybe your ego, your jiva may say, hey man, I'm God, you know, it starts to claim the experience. But that's not the way it is. Yeah. And I think most spiritual aspirants difficulty with this understanding is that they've had an experience of abiding as the self, right? In different times and periods of their life, maybe in intense sadhana, they had prolonged experiences of this and that. But then they went back into their ordinary life and the jivas come back up and, you know, life is difficult, right? Like there's a lot of circumstances where we have to deal with people and at our workplaces and so forth. And then the jiva is on fire and then you forget, you know. And so Ramana would always talk about you have to always remember smriti, right? Mm-hmm. You have to constantly remember. Like it's all well and good that your jiva is operating and this and that in the relative world. But if you've forgotten that it's all Brahman, then that's where the problems occur, you know. And so Ramana would say that the thing is that the more you practice, the effort to abide in the Atman gets less and less. You know, some people will say, oh, but someone like him had permanent sort of abidance in the self, and why is it for some like this and not for others? And the different aptitude, it really is, right? Like someone has an aptitude for music or writing and this, and sometimes some people have an aptitude for self-realization. It's just that way. We can't say why. We can't say why. To say why, you'd have to be Brahman in its totality. And none of us are in this form,
yeah.
Right? So, we are and we aren't. You know, that's a contradictory sort of statement. But that's the problem a lot of people have. It's the same questions they always bring up, like about, we know it's non-dual, but I have a sense of feeling dual.
Yeah.
You know, my existence is dual. My interactions feel dualistic. They do in the sense when you are fully of the belief that you're the jiva, right? But when you understand that this is a localization of the one consciousness expressing itself and doing its thing, then, you know, that's when you start to loosen your grip on that dualistic kind of, and those questions won't arise much anymore for you.
That is to say also like what Zhuangzi would say, to be a genuine pretender.
Exactly.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
We have different roles at different circumstances in the society, in different situations, different place. And you just play this role as a pretender. It's kind of a game of being a genuine pretender,
yeah.
while you remain as one with the Tao, one with your, the virtuous path, basically.
Yeah.
And again, like you said, the remembering part is what's really important. We often, because Maya is full of confusion, chaos, and looks so real, and so much temptation, and like so many things happening in a day, and so that we get easily drawn into that reality, and we start to believe and think from that place.
Mm.
We all make that sort of mistakes, but the remembering part is what kind of an anchor, right?
Mm.
Like that remain as a non-dual state of mind, seeing this as a literally as a movie, and you watching as a third party kind of thing will be able to help us to remain as the real self, true self.
Definitely. That is why the great Vedantists split Brahman up into two sections, so to speak, using two terms. That's why they had Saguna Brahman with qualities and Noguna Brahman without qualities. So as we are speaking, the ultimate reality really is Naguna Brahman,
yeah,
without qualities. But the way it appears in the dualistic play, the Leela, it's Saguna Brahman, it's with qualities.
Mm.
So, and it's a really different way to see the world, right? Like, that's why, like, I've heard, you know, meditation practices and that I've applied personally in my own life sometimes is that you walk around with the mantra, Brahman alone is real, Brahman alone is real. You keep this mantra in your mind, and it's kind of funny how you start to experience reality. But you would do this meditation practice because, like, you are on the Saguna level, so to speak, because you still have qualities.
Yes.
You have thoughts, you have feelings, you have emotions. You have a body, you know, and you experience pain and pleasure and also the neutral level.
Mm.
And so, but it's all Saguna. It's not Nirguna Brahman.
Mm.
So, but the interesting thing is that once you develop your perception, then you really do experience it this as Saguna Brahman. You experience the Brahman within the world with all of its qualities.
Mm. But it's Brahman.
But it's Brahman, you see. It's just Brahman with qualities. It's like the outer skin of Brahman. You know, if we were to use, you know, we would never dare to try and equate Brahman to being a human being. But like, you know, it's like just the outer layer.
Mm.
Like, it's for fun, you know. And I think that we obviously, as human beings, we forget that the play is a play. Like what Zhuangzi is saying, the genuine pretending, and we forget to have fun. We forget to enjoy ourselves, and we create all of these problems in the world because we think it's real. And it's not. It's like what Alan Watts said that time. He's like, is it serious? This is the first question of his lecture. And everyone's like, what are you talking about? He's like, is it serious? You know what I mean? Like, because it's not. You think it's serious and it's not serious.
The way he asked that question, it's just so funny.
Yeah, it's like, funny.
Yeah, yeah. Because he's coming from a place where he sees that the world being serious is a ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
It's a comedy.
Yes. Yeah. Divine comedy, yeah. It really is, right? Like, and so is it serious? And it's not. And that's the thing. Like, say, everything within this reality is Saguna, you know? And so, and this again is why you can follow the non-dualistic path, but also have devotion towards Brahman or Shiva or Vishnu or the Tao even, or Buddha.
Yeah, you know? As we mentioned earlier about like Rama, Krishna.
Yep.
Ramana Maharishi and Nisargadatta Maharaj, all these great sages had their own practices to express their love for God, right?
Mm-hmm.
And again, like the expression of love of God, worship of God, appears obviously outwardly. And that's why we have our statues and we have our rituals and symbols and things like that. But while we do all that spiritual rituals and things like that, but while we know what's non-dual at the same time. So that, again, that's why path of bhakti and path of jnani go together.
Yes, yes, yes.
You express love of God, being a truthful bhakti, while you know real knowledge, the real philosophy of this great tradition.
Yes.
You have a true love of God, true love of this knowledge, but you express outwardly being bhakti at the same time.
Yes. So, they can worship purely because they understand the nature of reality, as opposed to someone who is on a relative level, who are just a bhakti then. Like, they might go to church or the mosque and this and that, or even temple, but they are literally just a bhakti without any sense of jnana. You know, so they don't have the knowledge.
From that place, like just like a little bit like Christian coffin of confession. Like once you confess to a priest, you're forgiven, you go out and being a beast again.
Yeah.
Do that again, you're forgiven.
It's a bhakti level.
Very superficial external level of belief.
Yeah.
And again, a lot of people can be like that even in India without lots of people don't know the deeper knowledge of being jnani.
Yeah.
They just express a love of God from the rituals and prayers and all these kind of things. But again, like, I personally see them practicing the path of being bhakti, although they might not know the deeper knowledge of God, but they seem very sincere and very genuine, honest, very fully from the heart.
Yep.
So that from that practice also, some people say they can reach the level of Brahman consciousness as well.
Well, there's a lot of differences in India with like sects and stuff like that, right? Like, there can be very strong bhakti movements at probably most temples, especially when you look at Vaishnavism, right? Like, it's because it's a really highly bhakti oriented tradition, as opposed to Shaivism, which is more renunciation, jnana yoga. The difference is, making a distinction between, you know, because Hinduism is not really related to the kind of bhakti version of Catholicism, for example, is that even those people who are bhaktis in, say, the Vaishnava path, there will still be the Swami that has the knowledge in the temple, and they go to him, but they personally don't practice. They don't personally have the knowledge, right?
Yes.
So, but then if you go to somewhere like Ramana Ashram in South India, most people, because they're so devoted to Ramana, they know the teachings of Ramana. Right. They know Vedanta.
Yes.
So now, let's be frank, not everyone's going to have the knowledge.
Yes.
Because sometimes it flowers slowly within some people. Sometimes it happens spontaneously, suddenly. But you see the variation in India, right? Like with those different paths, right? Like, so if you go to the Vedanta Society, for example, you know, you're learning strict Vedanta and you're getting thrust into the path.
There's no warm-up.
Straight into Vivekananda's teachings, and then you're off you go. You know, you're in the Shankara lineage, and then like you said, there's no warm-up. You can't go and do bhajans and, you know, have love for Rama and Krishna straight away. It's like, don't worry about that. Here you go. You know, he's Advaita Vedanta, he's Jnana Yoga, everything's the self, and you're just like, what? Like, you just like flipped, you know?
Yeah, completely. The world's going upside down.
But the point is about all of that, because we were talking about Saguna, is that you can be the worshipper and the worshipped in the Saguna level if you have the knowledge.
Yeah.
Right. And so, and again, because we're talking about Saguna, so Brahman with qualities, it's ironic because when you look at, so, If we mention God in the classical sense in Sanskrit, we're talking about Ishvara. You know, Brahman is something completely different. But Ishvara actually is the image of Brahman, or the representation of Brahman. So it's Saguna. See? So it gives us a physical representation of something that we can worship that's beyond image, because Brahman is not an image, right? It's not an object of knowledge. But the great artists and the mythologists of the ancient times came up with Brahma, Shiva, Vishnu, Ganapati, you name it, you know what I mean? So you have all of these saguna representations of Brahman itself, yes, which is Ishvara.
Mm.
And then you yourself, who worship Ishvara, are the saguna representation of Brahman itself too. But you're,
yep,
it's almost like you're worshipping, or you are worshipping the love of your own self.
Yeah.
You know,
mm,
in this kind of play. Like, mm, it sounds contradictory, but yeah, that's the way that dualistic consciousness expresses its love for the non-dual reality.
Yeah,
you know,
I think the pure love of God, love of Brahman, can only be expressed that way, in paradoxical way, yes, only because, yeah, unless we leave this body,
yeah,
so while we are within this body, that's the only way we can express, mm-hmm, right?
Mm-hmm.
And again, that expression is very infectious,
mm,
when you keep practicing these practices, spiritual practices, walk on this path,
mm-hmm,
then you will really fully emerge into that state of consciousness.
Yeah, of course. Mm. And it's not contradictory, actually, to you.
Yeah.
Like, because, you know, you and I, we have our own sense of worship and our own sense of, like, mm, you know, respect and gratitude. We have a puja set up in our home, but it means more to us,
yes,
than to, like, someone who's probably new to the path, or you know, see, like, something as separate from them.
Yes, just pure, like, a superficial,
yeah, bhakti. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But for us, it has a deeper meaning, yeah, and that's why we have it. And it's like, it's hard to describe, right? Like, it's like explaining why Ramana had such a love for Arunachala, right? Like, it's, you and I have a love for Arunachala too. So, I mean, if you've never come in contact with the non-dual self, it's hard to explain why there is that love of that. And it's, but you can, you're expressing that, you know, the love for the absolute, you know, yeah, but you're doing it relatively.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you can do that, or you can go and eat hamburgers. You know what I mean? Like, because it's an either-or thing on the relative level, right? Like, so, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but again, if you know the knowledge, you wouldn't do that, right?
No, of course not, no. Mm-hmm. No. When you have the knowledge,
yeah,
you have tremendous respect, and
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, every time you and I go to the great, especially the great sacred places, and, you know, we have tears of joy and this and that, it's because we have an understanding of that, and we've, you know what I mean? We've, yeah, been doing this for quite some,
yeah,
time.
Sure. Yeah, it's expression of that tremendous gratitude.
Yes,
and,
exactly.
And love.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Mm. And that comes from a deeper knowledge, a deeper, mm, understanding,
yeah,
of not the the sense of Maya, not the Jiva's perspective. It's not, yeah, the Jiva, like, doing that. It's coming from a deeper level. If it was a jiva doing that, a jiva would be asking for blessings, would be asking to, you know, can I get that, you know, that car I want, you know what I mean? Like,
again, that becomes then posturing.
It's posturing, yeah.
Yeah, right. Like, as if you really know Brahman, but you don't really, but you're just doing a show, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So that's the thing. The Saguna Brahman is basically the image, in some sense,
yeah,
of the, actually, the real Naguna Brahman.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's a representation of the Naguna.
Mm.
And, you know, our minds can get attracted to just the Saguna Brahman, yeah, level, and not understand what the without qualities is.
Yes. Now, I wanted to read this quote by Ramana Maharishi saying, like, what one could go through this process of residing in the Maya to transcending that state of mind and be awake, awakening from that dream kind of thing. So, yeah, he says, if you withdraw your mind completely from the world and turn it within and abide then there, That is, if you keep awake always to the self, which is the substratum of all experiences, you will find the world of which you are now aware of just as unreal as the world in which you lived in your dream.
Mm-hmm. That's really powerful, isn't it?
Yeah, it's. I really like this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lines. Yeah.
So yeah, like when you wake up to the self,
yeah.
The world that you thought you were dwelling in.
Yeah, it's a dream.
Yeah, it was a dream.
Just like, again, just simply when we dream at night, like while we're asleep, right? It's so real. Like if it's really intense or really like not very good dream, then you're really like sad, feel really depressed or something. But then once you morning, the sun comes up, then you're awake, then, oh, that was a dream.
Yeah.
It's almost like that, right?
Yeah, it is.
When you withdraw yourself from this external world and when you abide in within, then you, when once you realize that sense of pure awareness, that is the only truth and that's all substratum of all experiences, then, oh, all this was a dream or unreal, basically. And I was so invested into this and this and this problem for nothing.
Yeah.
That is to say, we were still awake, but we were still like crying or worrying about what we dreamed that night.
Yeah.
That's how ridiculous it looks.
Yeah. I heard an analogy about the dream, saying what you were saying, like there was a couple, right? And then... one guy was dreaming about another woman.
Yeah.
And then, no, he was, sorry, let me change that. It was really, he was dreaming that his wife was with another man in the dream. And then when he woke up, he got angry at her.
Oh. Yeah, that's exactly.
You know what I mean? So that's how it can happen, right? Like, we don't wake up from our dream and start blaming people. You did this. You did.
But that did not happen.
That's in your own mind.
That didn't happen.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of how it is, right? Yeah. Like, but the awakening, like you said, is just like waking up from the actual real dream. Or it's kind of like when you're in a Zen monastery and you're starting to drift off with your mind and the master comes along and just gives you a few stiff ones on the shoulder and you're like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
I'll snap right out of that. Like, you start to think about cheeseburgers and like, oh, yeah, that movie's on Netflix today. And bang.
And meanwhile, you're already like saliva through your mouth everything. Yeah. And that excitement comes in and next minute the master comes around with the bamboo stick and bang.
Yeah. Like, and then you snap right out of it. But that's like what it's like, right? It's like that coming out of the dream, as Ramana was saying, and then a realization then that, wow, like I was living in... like in a show. My whole life was in a show, literally. I was on the stage and I was pretending to be this puppet, but I didn't realize I was a puppet. I'm just...
Again, when we just watch movie, same, the movie analogy. When we watch movie, instead of watching a movie purely from observer's perspective, you put yourself into a certain character and you think you are playing that character, literally.
Yeah. That's what's happening. But when you realize, then that's when you awaken, right? That's Ramana's point. It's
so from that perspective that the Brahman is real, the universe is unreal, but you know, universe is Brahman.
Exactly.
That makes perfect sense.
Makes perfect sense, yeah. It's so powerful, isn't it, that Shankara made that quote and that lineage is still going on.
Yeah.
And that understanding will never go away because that's the truth, right? It's the truth. And the thing is that it's difficult just that for people to wake out of that dream, to come out of that dream. And they actually hold on to the dream.
Yes.
I remember there was a satsang with Muji back in, I think, 2011. And someone was really vexed by a lot of social problems, unfairness. Mm. And then Muji was kind of like, you can't be vexed by these questions. This is going to impede your... spiritual practice and actually reinforce your sense of identity.
100%.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not that injustice and these sorts of problems are new. They've always been around. But if you're serious about spiritual path, you'll understand that and just work on yourself. And this is not a selfish thing. This is to come to the understanding of what the nature of reality is itself. Why? What? Which then you can understand why unfairness and injustice and that exists. Because it all comes from the dream. It comes from people believing they are in this dream. And they're reacting to this dream. And the dream is all through the sense of I. The dream is through the sense of the jiva. I see the world this way. And then that person sees the world that way. And so then you have all of these many worlds clashing. And they're all fake. They're not real. The world is Brahman alone. And if everyone understood it was Brahman alone, there'd be no conflict. There'd be no confusion ever.
And again, that sums up how important it is to do the self-inquiry practice. It all starts, if that was a problem, the problem begins. If that was enlightening experience, that's then enlightening experience. Or they all come from that, which I that you are operating from, basically. Which I are you dwelling into?
Exactly. And I can already hear the people questioning, or someone's probably already starting to write now. But, like, I have to resolve this and that. Like, what about this issue and that issue? You're only contributing to more of it. It's then that contributes to more and contributes to more because there's many worlds colliding.
Yes.
The way to resolve that is piece by piece, where we start to practice, as you said, self-inquiry and start to expose the nature of that illusion and that dream.
Yes. Again, the problem exists in one level of
On the relative level, of course. Yeah,
100%.
Yeah.
We need to go and get a groceries weekly or something. Yeah, of course, yeah. We have all these daily things that we need to do, but that exists on one level. That doesn't mean that we should get stressed by it.
No.
That means you already identify with that level of reality. Things will get done regardless, but while you remaining in the true self, then things will get done regardless, but the where you want to really abide in, that's the thing.
I remember there was a really good talk a student asked Ramana about Gandhi, right, and about like Gandhi's, you know, movement and everything like this, and Ramana, like, you know, He was saying that Gandhi's a great sort of, you know, servant and bhakti and from Ramana's perspective, everything is done by Shiva, right? Everything is done by Brahman. It's not even anything for him to talk about, really. But like, he did get into the nature of politics and the nature of, like, you know, forcing your perspective on other people and this and that. And it wasn't a sort of a criticism of Gandhi, but it was saying that, you know, it can go either or way. You know what I mean? It's not like it's going to be the conclusion that you expect it's going to be, right? From acting from the so-called dream perspective.
Yeah.
So, I can't quite remember the whole talk, but it was really a great talk about, you know, why. Because someone was asking Ramana, why don't you get involved in, like, you know, social issues and this and that? And it's kind of a stupid question to someone like him, right? Like, but because they don't exist from where he sits. Because he's not on the relative level anymore. He's on the, he sees existence as Brahman alone.
I guess it's for someone like Gandhi was pure karma yogi.
Yeah, karma yogi, yeah.
Yeah, practicing karma yoga. And that was his way to go about things. And that's how he believed that he could solve these problems, I think.
And that's why Ramana said it's all Brahman.
Yeah.
That's why he didn't really have much of a, like, an input as to what, you know,
What Gandhi
was doing. He's just saying it's all Brahman. You know, it's all the play of the self. And that's also guna. That's just Brahman with qualities. It's just... that's the lila, that's the play, you know.
Yes.
But he can say that from where he sits, you know what I mean? Because he sees the universe as Brahman. So, but from a relative level, as you were saying, you know, sometimes people will get so vexed by certain questions and then...
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean you don't go out and get your groceries and, you know, take care of your health and...
Yeah.
Obviously you do.
Yeah.
Like, but you understand from a higher perspective that that's just, you're just taking care of the relative perspective.
That's exactly right. Yeah, you have a much bigger of a perspective in life, that experience of a certain situation doesn't possess you.
Mm.
You're not fully involved in that whatever is happening.
No.
Mm. You acknowledge it's happening, but you're always somewhat like above that.
Mm.
Like there is a gap. Like it's happening, and you give enough input to work it out in a certain way, the way you want, and just let things work it out itself, kind of thing, instead of fully get into it and have a personal opinion or whatnot.
Yeah, because your life's completely shanti.
Yeah.
You're not, and you see it as Brahman. Mm. So you all of the activities are happening as Brahman for Brahman.
Yeah.
It's not you as a jiva living your life anymore. So that's the whole idea of the dissolution of your own will to allow Shiva's will to take over.
Again, the will is an interesting thing too. That like in a one level, there is a personal will. Do I want to drink this tea or do I don't want to drink this tea? It's a personal choice, that kind of will. Of course, they exist. But in the bigger perspective, there is only Brahman's will.
Yeah.
Brahman is the running the show, basically. Yeah. Yeah.
And from someone like Ramana's perspective, it's Brahman's will that's drinking the tea. It's no longer your personal will.
So your will is Brahman's will.
Your will is Brahman's will.
Okay. Mm.
But not as you are in God. It's that your jiva's not there no more.
Yeah, right.
So what's taking over your relative life is the absolute.
Mm.
You know, so.
Again, from that perspective, the saguna Brahman is not saguna anymore. Then.
It's naguna, yeah. Mm.
You are living in this reality, physical reality, but you operate from the Nuguna Brahman.
Exactly.
Mm.
Exactly.
Mm.
And that's the nature of that quote, yeah, isn't it? Yeah. Really is.
That's really good.
There's so much to talk about there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There really is.
Yeah.
Mm. But like what we were just saying, your will has become one with with Brahman.
That's really beautiful.
Yeah. Mm. All right, guys, we hope you enjoyed, and we'll see you guys next time.